This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik. It's Friday afternoon. It's our Doctor in the House segment today with my co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist. How are you, George?
I'm very good, Shao-Ik. Just looking forward to many, many more shows not talking about COVID, really.
Today, we're really out of our realm, George. It's Absolutely. Earth Day, and we thought we'd take the opportunity to look a bit beyond just the clinical aspects of disease management that we talk about quite a fair bit, and look at the impact of the environment and a lot of our practices that relate to the environment and how they affect human health. So in March, a group of researchers in the Netherlands discovered the presence of microplastics in human blood for the first time. And I think this adds weight to the growing call to recognize the impact of pollution on human health. But what are microplastics? More importantly, how have they made their way into our bloodstream? And of course, what we want to know is how will it affect our bodies and our health?
Very scary, right?
It sounds very, very terrifying to me. I'm picturing them floating around in my blood doing goodness knows what. But luckily, George, you and I don't have to figure this out on our own. We have joining us all the way from the Amsterdam University Medical Centers, Dr. Juan Garcia. He's an associate professor. He wears many hats, a very, very specialized work he does in molecular cell biology, immunology, in cancer immunology, among others. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Garcia.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
So Dr. Garcia was one of the researchers involved in the microplastic study that I mentioned earlier. So we just want to find out a little bit more about him and perhaps have a bigger conversation about what we need to be looking at when it comes to pollution, plastic pollution, and human health. So do call us if you have any questions or thoughts you'd like to share. You can call us at 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So, you know, I feel like when we hear more about the consumption and waste of plastic that is entering the environment, you know, it sounds like we're living in this plastic soup. So how do we get out of all this goop? Dr. Garcia, perhaps I can get you to share with us a big picture. And I guess that would also come from the perspective of why you and your research teammates wanted to look at microplastics and, you know, its presence in the human body. What is the big picture when we're talking about our environment and our health?
Yeah, so the motivation to run this study was for a very personal motivation, I should say. I mean, I as an immunologist, I've been working for 20 years on topics related to, well, hardcore topics in immunology, cancer immunology, autoimmunity, etc. But we recently moved to a new building, and then we were housed together with different other departments, and in some of these interactions, meetings that we had, I got to meet Dr. Heather Leslie, who is an environmental scientist. And because of this interaction, we started to talk about each other's work, and we figured that maybe we could do some things together. And so we wrote this project called Immunoplast to address, but Dr. Leslie had all the technology to investigate the presence of microplastics in different matrices, tissues, but also sources from the environment. Many of the in vitro tests that we do in our lab to explore the functioning of cells in different diseases like cancer or autoimmunity can also be used to study the effects of pollutants. So we thought, okay, let's join forces and see whether we can maybe try to find something in their interface of our specialties. And so around that time, the Dutch government was doing a very, in my opinion, pioneer effort in financing research to understand the real problem of microplastics in the environment and their effect on human health. And they financed 15 pilot projects to investigate this topic, and amongst them was ours. And so we set out to collect blood from otherwise healthy donors and investigate whether there was any microplastic to be seen in the blood. And in the meantime, also to set up some in vitro assays to explore the effect of these microplastics on human immune cells. And the results is what of this work is what we have published a couple of weeks ago, and indeed it shows what we kind of suspected, because when we submitted the grant application, it had recently been shown that microplastics were found in human feces. And so we suspected that if they had already been in contact with our digestive tract, that they could have also crossed the barrier and be present in blood. And this is just a confirmation of what we suspected. But it's just confirmation that didn't come without shock, of course. And I can imagine that many people are worried about this. We don't know yet what the consequences are for human health. And it would be, I think, very difficult to weigh this out compared to all the different pollutants and contaminants that we are exposed to, of course. But so we're working on that. That's the next step, of course.
I'll probably ask you a little bit more about the significance of what you found. What does it mean to find it in blood as opposed to feces, you know? But perhaps this might be a good point to make sure that our listeners also understand what are microplastics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, microplastics are plastic fragments that come out of the degradation of all the plastics that we're exposed to. And the word micro indicates that they are of a small size. And typically we call them microplastics when they're smaller than 5 millimeters in size, right? And they have been detected in the environment in multiple sources, in any range of size between the nanometer range, so that's 1 millionth of a millimeter, up to a few micrometers and millimeters.
Where do they come from, though?
From all the plastic stuff that we use in our daily life. Really, packaging, of course, but even in cosmetics, lip gloss, toothpaste, really look around.
Absolutely.
You find plastic everywhere.
Absolutely. George?
Well, when did we really first discovered microplastic existed? I mean, that probably will tell you how much it has been polluting the world, right? Do we have any idea how long microplastic has actually been in existence in the environment?
I think we know about this. First of all, as I said before, I'm an immunologist and not an environmental scientist, so I'm not sure if I'm qualified to address this question, but as far as the literature that I'm familiar with, microplastics have been found in the environment already for a number of years. Lots of reports, validated reports, in finding microplastics in the air, in suspension, all the way up to the Arctic. So, I mean, it's unavoidable. There are even calculations about the amount of microplastics in air in domestic environments and
in homes.
In food, in water, soil.
All right.
This is very well documented.
In our food chain, basically, and that gives us an answer as to how it's entering the body as well. So you said that you took blood samples from otherwise healthy participants for your study. Give us an idea of what you then found. You know, how intense was the level of microplastics found in the blood? Did you see it across all the study subjects?
So we collected about a couple of milliliters of blood in a very, I mean, one of the difficulties of the study was to collect the blood in a way that would not get contaminated with microplastics, okay? So to make sure that we had an accurate and reliable measurement. And for that purpose, we used a special system in which the blood is collected through a stainless steel needle directly into a glass tube.
So you're not introducing new microplastics in.
Mm. Yes, that's very, very important to note. The tube was then directly frozen, and we stored all the samples together until we could analyze them. And the next step, still in a closed environment, was to process all the blood to make sure that all the biological material was removed, and that we did with a number of enzymes and special reagents that allow you to do this, filter the remaining material, and then in that filter, which had a cutoff of 700 nanometers, all the microplastics that could be present were collected. And that was taken to a special analytical instrument called a pyrolysis gas chromatography mass spectrometer. It's a mouthful, but it's a really complex instrumentation. And that detected, that told us whether the different monomers of the microplastic components were present there. So what that means is that we know that the particles are bigger than 700 nanometers.
Mm-hmm.
And we know their composition. Yeah. So we know that there were some PETs, so polyethylene terephthalate, polystyrene, PMMA. So these are the very, very common type of microplastics.
Yeah, and were they present in very concentrated amounts in the blood?
So we estimated a concentration of an average concentration of about 1.5 micrograms per milliliter. We don't have any reference. I mean, what is the normal value? Normal value should be zero, right? I mean, the presence, the fact that you find them consistently, that already tells you something. But we don't have any comparisons to make, and I think that the next step is definitely going to do this in a bigger cohort with more people to really be able to start comparing and see if there is any relationship with, for example, like people that are more exposed because of their profession or habits.
George?
Dr. Garcia, was the microplastic present in every single subject that you study, and what sort of sample size did you have?
We had 22 blood from 22 individuals. We found quantifiable amounts in 17, I believe, so it's about 70% of all the individuals. And in the remaining, there were measurable amounts, but not quantifiable. So we have a limit of quantification and a limit of detection. So the limit of detection, we had it in all samples, but in the limit of quantification, we could only measure on 70%.
So you, in significant amounts, say about 70% of your, well, admittedly small study, but would you deem the results of your study still significant enough to warrant concern?
Yeah, well, we have continued to study in the meantime. This data is from actually a year and a half, and we have been able to verify this with a bigger cohort. And we will continue with the work, and when we have a bigger sample size, we'll publish it, of course, but we're confident that the results that we have are reliable.
All right. Let's go for a quick break. And when we come back, more about what these microplastics could potentially do in the body. I'm speaking to my co-host, Dr. George Lee, of course, for our Doctor in House segment. We have on the line with us Dr. Juan Garcia, Associate Professor at the Amsterdam University Medical Centers. And we're discussing how microplastics affect the human body. You can call us at 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 if you have any thoughts you'd like to share. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back. Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik, and my co-host, Dr. George Lee. It's our Doctor in House segment today. It's Earth Day. We thought we would take a look a little bit beyond our usual coverage of health issues that are very, I guess, clinical in their perspective. We want to look at other practices, other factors in our environment that have an effect on our health. Today, we're looking at microplastics, their presence in our environment. They're very, very ubiquitous presence. They are basically particles of plastic, smaller than 5 millimeters, that come from literally everything that we use and consume in our modern lives today. We have joining us to talk about a study that he was involved in, which found the presence of microplastics in human blood, Dr. Juan Garcia, Associate Professor at the Amsterdam University Medical Centers. Do call us if you have questions or thoughts, 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899. So we've talked about what are microplastics, what the study revealed, and will continue to prompt more study into in terms of the prevalence of presence of such plastic particles in the human body. But I'm curious to know, Dr. Garcia, and I'm not sure even if this is perhaps a very, very fundamental question, but I assume in food packaging, plastic water bottles, containers, and all of that, we could potentially be ingesting these plastic particles. How do they get into the bloodstream after that?
That's a very, very good question, Shawik. I mean, and this was the first question that came to my mind the moment that we discovered that indeed we had positive signals in the blood. We get in contact with microplastics via the air and the food. And normally our mucosal barriers in the respiratory system and the digestive system should prevent particles from crossing. So the only thing that we can conclude is that they are not that effective in the particular with plastic, microplastic. How that happens is something that there are groups investigating this at the moment. We are in contact with them, but we don't have yet a proper answer to this. I think there could be a mechanism of transcytosis, so that there are cells that capture the microplastics and pass them to the circulation. That could be one.
Oh, like a transportation system.
Yeah, and there could also be disruptions in the mucosal barriers that where the microplastics could get in contact. This is a big question. Yeah,
George.
Well, are these microplastics, are they small enough? Let's say comparison with other molecules like proteins and things. How do they fare? And then is that the reason why they get absorbed so easily? Because they're too small? Can they just cross the mucosa readily?
The microplastics that we have detected are bigger than 700 nanometers. As I mentioned before, this is the cutoff that we have used for the specific filter to capture the microplastics. Mm-hmm. And in that respect, they are about 1,000 times bigger than molecules.
The other question, Dr. Garcia, I want to ask you is that as an immunologist, presumably you're also trying to find out whether microplastics themselves are inert or they actually invoke some sort of immunological response. Do you have any idea what sort of immunological response is evident?
No, so these microplastics have been in the environment. We don't know for how long time. Their surface is hydrophobic, and the way that they are going to be in the microenvironment is by being coated with what we call a corona or an eco corona. And that means that they're going to be collecting all kind of microbes, and that they're going to form a biofilm. As such, the microplastics may have two types of effects on the immune system. They may bring us in contact with microbes that otherwise we would not be in contact with, and that could be resulting in a pathogenic effect. or maybe altering our microbiota. And secondly, the chemicals that the microplastics are composed of, they may cause an let's say, an irritation, if you allow me to use this word, on our immune system. And that is what we are trying to understand. And of course, the way to do this is using specific tests to address the impact of microplastics on immune cells. That's what we are doing in my lab. And we are investigating whether microplastics, for example, may trigger inflammatory responses. And we see that to a certain extent they can in a controlled environment in the lab. And it has also been reported before that they may also lead to the production of reactive oxygen species in some cells. So that is something related to aging or inflammation as well. But I think that so I don't want to alarm anyone with this. I mean, these are tests that we perform in the lab with isolated and purified material. I think that we're still missing a big gap of knowledge, because the microplastics that we find have been weathered and have been exposed in the environment for a long time. Those are the ones that we really need to use to see what is the effect of those microplastics, and not the type of pure and clean microplastics that we use in the lab, right? So this is something that where we need some tools still, and more research is needed. And then also isolate the effects of microplastics from other contaminants. You know, that we might be exposed to simultaneously.
Other contaminants meaning heavy metals, I suppose, other toxins in the environment, other pollutants?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, microplastic exposure is just a result of overpopulation, industrialization, et cetera. There, you need to think, especially on a day like today, on what are the what is the exposure that we are having as human beings, what kind of potential insults that are not just microplastics, but many other things as well.
We have a question here on WhatsApp who's asking, are these particles removable through some sort of chelation or detoxification method?
That's a very interesting question, sort of a dialysis mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. I mean, we haven't tried that. That's would be very speculative to say that it's possible to remove them. We first need to know where in the blood they are. Are they free-floating in plasma, or are they bound to cells? Are they traveling inside some of the cells that we have in the circulation? This is one of the questions that we are trying to address at the moment, and I think that would also help us to know and understand if we need to remove them and how.
And who would need that to be done too? I mean, presumably all of us have all these in our blood by now.
I'm pretty sure, and probably some people more, even because of their professional exposure. But one question that I ask myself, not as a scientist but as an individual, is that, you know, the fact that we discovered that they're present in blood doesn't immediately mean that they are pathogenic. They could be just also not doing a lot, and then we have to ask ourselves, do we need to worry? Or so I in all the interviews that I've been doing the last weeks, I always try to bring the message that it's important to maybe think about it and create a little bit of concern, but we don't know yet what the real effects on human health are.
Could the particles potentially still be excreted from the body?
It would be possible that maybe they can be perhaps filtered. We're looking into that as well. It would be very interesting to test if we can find them in urine, or if there are other mechanisms. Maybe the biliary system could be another one via the liver. Yeah.
All right.
This is still ongoing research.
George.
Well, Dr. Garcia, you definitely give me some idea to find something in the urine now, because, you know, I'm a urologist and it, so I'm getting quite excited now.
Yeah, very good.
I'm wondering, we talk about how ubiquitous these plastics are in our everyday consumables. Face masks are something that everyone has been using religiously for the past 2 years and more. What do you know about the possibility of inhaling microplastics from face masks?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's being also reported. But I tell everyone about this. The risks of contracting COVID are much worse than inhaling microplastics. For at least that we have evidence for. So I think that we should keep using masks for as long as health authorities advise us to do that. Mm-hmm. And there is actually being a recent report from a British group showing, in fact, some of these fibers on lung tissue. So, yes, it's there, yeah.
It's there. But, again, like you said, the known dangers of COVID are more immediate.
Absolutely.
You've talked a lot about what other, you know, how you are expanding your research and other researchers like you as well. But if we look a little bit beyond your immediate scope of study, what would you like to see from, you know, perhaps the rest of society, perhaps corporate stakeholders in terms of understanding and acknowledging this link, this very concrete link between pollution and our health?
Well, I do think that we have to make compromises to make our life, style of life, a little bit more sustainable. That's I think that's something that I'm not saying as an immunologist, but but as a person that is a big compromise with our environment. And I think that we need a little bit of support from authorities to and from the industry as well to in this regard. So I always try to think of what is our circle of influence, what can we do? And we can certainly try things in reducing the consumption of plastics in our daily life, but that's not enough. We also need to ask and demand from our politicians to make an effort in creating legislation that is more, keeping more in consideration the environment and the future of for our children and grandchildren.
Absolutely. And I know you've been trying to temper this and allay, you know, alarmist sort of responses to studies like yours. But also at the same time, what are you most worried about in terms of its implications?
What am I most worried about? I think the worry is that it's difficult to get rid of microplastics in our environment there. So if we find out that they're involved, for example, in the rise of allergies, autoimmunity, or cancer, and if we actually verify that this is the case, what worries me is how are we going to prevent it? But I think there is, as I said before, there's a long road before we can actually establish that link.
Yeah, it does feel like the research continues to open a Pandora's box where we may have more questions than answers.
Well, it may help the industry perhaps introduce programs to try to replace microplastic or the components of these microplastics that perhaps could be toxic for humans. With others that are more biocompatible, that would be an actionable point. And then maybe that change could help us in the future. But then again, what do we do with all the pollution that we have right now in our environment? It will take a long time to clean it.
We have to start somewhere, though.
That's right. George? That's why we do this research, because the first step is to visualize if there is a problem, and then we need to do something about it.
Dr. Garcia, this is the first time I see Shawik being optimistic. Normally, she's just doom and gloom. She said it's always too late already. But, you know, today she's optimistic, realistically optimistic. I'm going to ask you a question, Dr. Garcia. Obviously, you are the only researcher who has done this study in the world, presumably. I mean, of course, that is a beginning. If you were to predict this study, the same study is to be done in different part of the world, do you think all of us have got the microplastic in us already? Or do you think there's quite a variation across the world?
I think exposure is going to be linked to lifestyle. And then I can revert that question to you. Do you think that lifestyle is comparable across different places? And I think that globalization is probably the answer to this, right? And so I would predict so. And we're not the only ones doing this type of work, by the way. So the technology that we are using is a technology that is available to other researchers as well. And we know that other people are doing this. And we've also received a lot of feedback from other researchers that agree with our findings.
Can I get some final thoughts from you, Dr. Garcia?
Final thoughts? Well, I think it's important to be aware of our exposure to microplastics. Perhaps it's a good opportunity to think a little bit about how can we reduce both the release of microplastics in the environment by reducing the consumption of plastics in general, and about our personal consumption, of course, of and exposure to microplastics until we know more.
Which you'll be working on. George, any final thoughts?
Dr. Garcia, when you first described how you do the experiment by, you know, making sure the needles has no microplastic, the syringe has no microplastic, I have this vision that the whole world is already covered in microplastic. And so therefore, yes. I was more or less kind of in doom and gloom about this. However, my whole Friday is brightened up by Shawik saying that we always have to start somewhere. And for the sake of Earth Day, we really should start somewhere. If your findings really is finding out that in the future, this is affecting our grandchildren, we have to start sometime.
All right. Thank you so much for speaking to me today. Dr. George Lee, my co-host, and Dr. Juan Garcia, Associate Professor at Amsterdam University Medical Centers. We've been discussing microplastics and how they affect the human body. You've been listening to Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.